My job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them, and I will do it by whatever means necessary.
Welcome to the Black Girls Heal podcast, where we talk about healing our intimacy disorders, unresolved trauma, and building a healthy relationship with first ourselves and then others. Every episode, we will talk about advice you can apply today to break unhealthy patterns and grow in your self-worth. I'm Sheena Lachey, love addiction coach and trauma specialist. Let's begin.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Black Girls Heal. I'm so happy to be with you again this week. This week, we are talking about three mistakes for a love avoidance to avoid when they are dating, or three common mistakes that love avoidance make. Last week, we talked about three mistakes that love addicts make, and this week, we're talking about love avoidance. Please pardon any wiggly sounds in my voice more than normal. I am caught with something. I don't know if it's allergies. I don't know if it's the signs of something more. It hasn't really progressed, but I've been really congested and a little bit coughy, but all the pollen signs are there. So I might stumble through this a little bit, but we'll clean it up in post-editing. So why is this something that is important to know? Because sometimes we can be our own worst enemy when it comes to getting closer to people. Sometimes as love avoidance, we can mistake our keen sense of discernment and analyzing and pattern recognition and self-respect and self-boundaries. It could cross the line into being something that is prohibiting us from getting close and developing the relationships that we want. That is actually reinforcing our anxiety and hypervigilance, maybe even paranoia for some of us, around threats and our threat response when it comes to people and what the risk that comes when it comes to intimacy, and also seeing intimacy as a risk versus an opportunity to get all of that rich, nurturing safety and sense of fulfillment that does come with really healthy community and really healthy relationships when you're a part of a village, a tribe, and a healthy partnership. So we're going to talk about some mistakes that love avoidance make when it comes to dating and building those relationships. If you're just now joining the podcast, I do give examples through the lens of romantic partnerships, not because I think that they are more important than others, but because our other types of relationships, including your relationship with yourself, but because I truly believe and I know and I've seen over my decade plus experience as a mental health professional that everyone is led to their healing process through different doors, through different avenues, which all ends up helping us hopefully get to the same point. Some people start their healing journey because they are very aware of issues with depression or anxiety. Some people lose a loved one. That was part of my story. And the grief and the overwhelm from that leads them into looking for something deeper. Some people are aware that they are codependent. Some people are aware that they have drug or alcohol addiction. Some people, the people who I talk to here on this podcast, are people who keep having persistent relationship issues when everything in their life seems like, and it should be, going swimmingly, right? So if I'm the common denominator, or if there are resources that I need to know, let's figure that out. And so through here, we learn that sometimes the persistent issues that we have is not because of a lack of skill, a lack of trying, a lack of intellect. It's because there are some deeper underlying patterns that, again, in our own self-awareness, especially if we're highly functioning, especially if we're successful, we will miss. And so this is our gateway to not only improving our relationships, but improving our relationships with ourselves, healing ourselves, breaking generational curses, trauma, what have you, and loving on our inner child. That's it for our intro. Let's go ahead and jump on in.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. Before we get started, let's take a small break to say thank you to this week's sponsors.
So if love addiction is the persistent obsession of a person, a relationship, or the fantasy of a personal relationship and mistaking it for love, then love avoidance is the persistent putting up of walls to avoid being emotionally overwhelmed by another. Love is seen as an obligation, as a responsibility versus something that is joyfully given. 9.999 times out of 10, a love avoidant person has been charged with taking care of the emotional, physical, mental, spiritual, sexual, financial betterment of other people outside of their scope. A lot of times it has started very early as young people. Sometimes it is induced by trauma. You know, I've had so many people who've had a really beautiful and secure childhood, and then addiction ends and enters the family system. Someone passes away, someone gets sick, an interloper and a narcissist enters the family system. And so then that causes the abandonment, rejection wounds, trust issues, parentification, codependency, what have you, right? So the stories and the combinations are endless. You know, if you're someone who has been in the foster care system, or even if in kinship adoptions and family raising you, that also is something that's very emotionally overwhelming, traumatizing to a child's system, body, sense of safety, feeling wanted, right? And so we will create our own defense mechanisms to keep relationships and their expectations at sometimes completely out for some of us, but for many of us at arm's length so that we can control it, so that we can have a not only a bird's eye view, we want drone level, satellite level scope of what is happening. We want to see everything at every single angle and underneath as well. We want the whole 360 view. If we could see this in 4D and not just in 3D, and we could see through time and space dimension to see what's going to happen and what could have happened, and be able to predict successfully what's going on, we're going to do that because we have learned that when you don't do that, when you get caught slipping, you get hurt and you get devastatingly hurt. Even if you don't let people see your sweat, even if you don't let people see on what is happening, you will end up being the one who falters at the end. There's too much risk and not enough reward. And so, again, because of things that we have gone through, seen, experienced, we have either outwardly swore or internally vowed that never be me, will never be me again. And so we will make it hard for the good people to love us. We will make it hard for, or it's hard for us to trust good things when it is in front of us, because good things have always been just bait for something worse. You know, they've been the anglerfish of the world. For those of you who don't know what anglerfish are, in case, and, you know, hopefully I am correct in naming it, but if you've ever watched Finding Nemo, you know, when they're down in the darkness and they see a light. And they go swimming towards the light and they're singing and they're happy, only for it to be revealed that it's a giant fish with fangs that starts to chase them all around, right? So we have had that experience when it comes to people, relationships, friendships, opportunities that seem too good to be true. And so we have learned to have some discernment. So I've said millions of times now, we do not have millions of episodes, so we're definitely in the hundreds, but you've heard me say many, many times before that many of us have very great discernment and intuition, and our intuition is on point. However, our trauma response and our emotional response feels just as strong, just as deep, just as rich and seemingly intuitive as our intuition. You know, sometimes our gut response is based on being grounded and being aware of our environment, spiritual guidance from Holy Spirit, God, universe, whatever it may be, your ancestors, your guides. And sometimes it is your inner child being like, hell no, I've seen this before. Or a manager, if you're into internal family systems, a part of you that's like, I've seen this game, we're not doing this. And you have a visceral response towards avoiding it. Like I was saying in the intro, you know, sometimes there are really great relationships and people that it's time for us to get to know that can be scary. Many of us have not gotten past a certain point in relationships. So I want you all to consider, especially if you're someone who relates to the concepts of love avoidance, where you will keep people close, but not too close. You want to be able to see them, but you want to see them when you want to at your time period. You want them to come when you want them. You don't want them to require too much if you pass your threshold, right? Even if you're a very giving person, you have not only your boundaries, but your boundaries are also there in place to prevent you from being emotionally overwhelmed and put upon, right? Unless it's someone who deserves it. And there are very few that make that cut to deserve it. So to that point, think about all of your relationships, current and past relationships. And to what point have they been able to progress? To what point have you been able to get to before it starts to falter, if not before that? So how long do you typically stay in romantic partnerships or even friendships? How long do you stay in partnerships and it's still good before things start to falter? You know, is there a certain time period? Is there a certain event that tends to happen that is the catalyst for things to start to dissipate, right? Is it that you can get pretty far in relationships and you tend to date or partner or befriend really great people, but there's a certain time period to where you start to get nitpicky, you start to get busy, you start to find folks annoying. And sometimes the way that this presents is that it's not that you are aware that you're doing it, but what you can see in the pattern is, yeah, about a month in is when I always start to get into it, or about a month or two in is when people start to reveal that they're really not there for you, right? Like it's like clockwork. And so this reinforces your belief. Is it possible that you have an internal threshold in your nervous system that you can only tolerate closeness with people for about 2 to 3 months before you have to find something? Because we have to think about when we look at things therapeutically and look at our mindset and look at the ways that we're operating the world, we have to look at, is this true? Especially if you're someone who values being logical and analytical and looking at all the evidence, is it true that there are no people in the world who can have any healthy friendships, partnerships, and relationships past a 2 to 3 month period? If that's your threshold, right? So if that is not true, if these healthy friendships, best friends, partnerships, marriages where people really love each other can last a duration past that point, it is untrue for you to come to the realization that, yeah, people are always going to disappoint me past 2 to 3 months. It's either one of two things. It's either the people that you're picking, or it's you and your perceptions and your defense mechanisms that you are adding to the relationship. Now, again, a lot of these things are subconscious, right? Like you're not aware that you have an internal timer, but your nervous system does. Somewhere along the way, your body learned through pattern recognition, okay, about 60 days in is when BS starts. It's when the fuck shit starts. Or maybe 75 to 90 days in is when people are about to abandon me, disappoint me, lose me. So about 50 to 60 days, that's when I'm going to start getting kind of rumblings in my gut and start to look for, manifest, create red flags. So that way, when it's time to distance from this person, I was the one who did it. I was the one who peeped game. I was the one who was more in control and in charge, you know, versus letting yourself surrender to the process of relationships. Some of you heard me just say the word surrender and you cringed, right? You're about to turn off the podcast. Surrender? Is she about to talk about surrendering in the dating process? She got me. She does not have the right one today. This episode is for somebody else, right? But yeah. Love and connection absolutely requires deep intimacy. Love and connection absolutely requires some elements of surrender. Absolutely. That's why it's called falling in love. Many of us have fallen in love with our biggest predators, but it's not because people are predatory. It's because in a room of 100 people, we have found the predators. We have gone our whole lives being very clear with our boundaries and our standards to prevent being harmed. And then the one time we step out, it ends up falling flat on our face. And so we got to look at, okay, where am I in this equation? What is it that I'm adding to this or not seeing to help myself? What is it that I'm not aware of? A lot of times it's just that things are normalized. It's just that you grew up in a narcissistic home. You grew up being hyper independent and doing everything yourself. You grew up being needless and wantless. And so now things that are normal to you, now when things happen that are reflects to other, they're just normal to you. Okay. So love avoidance. I want us to be able to break the cycle and to be able to have relationships that are fulfilling and loving. And so let's talk about three common mistakes that love avoidance make when it comes to dating and romantic relationships so that you can be mindful of them and avoid them. So like I said, with the Love Addiction podcast, these tips are also very good for those of us who are in partner relationships already, whether or not you're very happy in the partnership or things could be a little bit better. The themes and the elements of what I talk about, you can always pull from and glean from situation or concepts that you can apply to your relationship, even if it's just you looking at yourself, being clear with yourself about what you want, feeling validated in that and all of that. Okay. So the first mistake that love avoidance make in dating relationships is getting spooked when it's getting too good. So I kind of alluded to this in the overview before leading into these points, but one of the highest threats to your nervous system is not when you are in danger. If anything, for those of us with symptoms of complex PTSD and childhood trauma and things of the like, you know, where a lot of stuff went down, when stuff starts to get hairy, that's when we turn on. Like when there's chaos in the system, when there is a threat, when there are problems that we have to solve, fights that we have to mediate, long texts that we have to read and scribe and send to other people. Like that is our zone. I mean, I hate to say comfort zone, but it's very familiar to us because that is what we have. That is what's been normalized to us. I can't remember if they were saying, I saw like a TV show or something, and I can't remember, you know, at this point, I'm kind of blurring some concepts together. So because I can't name the source, just take this with a grain of salt. But I was watching some program and I want to say they were talking about sociopaths or someone like that. Maybe not a sociopath because they tend to not really have the typical emotional response. But or maybe it was about domestic abusers. But basically, they were measuring the heart rate of people who would become violent. And so their heart rate, I guess in normal life, might be in the normal range, or it might be a little bit elevated and high. But when they were able to tap into anger or tap into being more explosive and volatile, you know, unleashing some of the things that were going on inside of them, their heart rate would lower, like it would settle. Like it's almost like they could step into this cool rage that was enticing to them. It was safe to them. It was satisfying to them. Because it was familiar and it was pleasurable. Many of us have been, what's been familiar for us is chaos. And so those are the places that we thrive during the midnight phone calls for help from people. When we are on the phone with people in the middle of the day, but it's hours during our workday or when after work, when we're trying to rest and relax, but we have that friend that's always in crisis again and uses us to emotionally dump. Like these are things that are not comfortable, but they're familiar to us, right? So our nervous system knows how to deal with it. What it doesn't know how to deal with is a person, a relationship, or friendship consistently being good with no complaints, without the roller coaster, without the up and down, without the maybe they will, maybe they won't. That's scary because you no longer have the pattern recognition. They're breaking what you know to be true. They are off cycle. So when you are still sending me texts and messages consistently, when you are still providing for me and giving me financial support without blaming me and saying and acting as if I'm a drain or as if I'm a burden to you, when you continue to tell me nice things and give me compliments without expecting something in return or the amount and the frequency of those dissipating over time, you're like, okay, what gives? What gives? Because my body, my nervous system knows that this is all going to fade. My body is also looking for the negging, right? Like you're looking for a backhanded compliment. You're looking for them keeping a password on their phone and not letting you look at it and being hypervigilant about you touching it. Like you're looking for these things. And when they are not there, you go looking for them and you end up trying to create them. If you can't find the big red flags that you're looking for, you will find something that you don't like about this person. You will rush towards, I can't do this anymore. And you will anticipate trying to break up with them. This has been an ongoing thing that I myself have had to learn in healthier relationships. Like the threat response is there, right? And the ease leads, right? Partnerships. That our EZ is very, very high. And I absolutely relate to looking for and creating problems that are insurmountable. And it is very annoying when you have a partner that surmounts them, that climbs them, This man got flags that he will plant at the top of the mountain, you know, and just do it just with ease. It was like, I was trying to be up out of here. What? And you're being affirming while I am trying to like create distance with us? What are you saying? Get away from me. Like, you know, like that is so tricky because you don't know what to do with that. You have not been attuned to what it feels like to be loved. That's scary because love has always hurt. Love has always hurt. That is the pattern that you know. You love me, I fall, I get hurt. There's never been anyone or any situation that actually catches you, and that is a threat. So love avoidance, we have to learn how to not get spooked when it's getting too good, and we have to pick the right people to practice with. That's why y'all hear me talk about this all the time. That's right. Why I wrote a whole book about it and why that one got published before the No Contact book, because I was like, how am I going to tell y'all not to talk to anybody and to cut off what you've been using as your resource for love and connection and companionship? And now you're just going to be, you know, ass out because you don't know how to pick the right people to replace them with. So you go no contact with this person or with these family members only to find their replacements the next day, the same minute you send the text. You got joker number two ready to waste your time and lead you through hell, right? So we have to pick the right partners, friendships, and relationships for us to practice with. And if we're having trouble with that, it's about looking within to say, okay, what is the pattern that I'm repeating? What is it that I have to learn how to give myself? What is my next step, right? So we have the How to Pick Partners book by Sheena Lachey with a workbook that you can assess not only yourself and your own availability, but the availability of everybody in your circle. You got worksheets and assignments and scales for everybody in your circle. And then also places for you to dictate what are the next steps you're going to take, right? But then of course the main book that breaks it all down. So all of that is available for you.
Hey, we hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. Let's take a quick break to say thanks to this week's sponsors.
So I know this might not be the case everywhere, but here in Houston, it's already starting to get really warm. Those Texas summers start very early for us. And with the type of summers we have here, we cannot have too many layers. And we have to make sure that our clothes are comfortable, breathable, and still help us feel put together. And the Skims Fit Everybody collection has been the perfect set of undergarments to have under my preliminary sundresses, short sets, and outfits that I've been rocking as we've been going to outdoor picnics, parks, brunches, and everywhere in between. They keep me so comfy and cool underneath my favorite outfits seamlessly. I have multiple shades of my favorite pieces, so it's so great to be able to switch them out depending on the cut, depending on the mood and the need. And they are always super lightweight, which makes it the perfect choice no matter where I'm going. The Fits Everybody collection is available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X, and you can shop now at skims.com and Skims stores. After you place your order, make sure you let them know that I sent you. Select podcast in the survey and be sure to select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. So yeah, we need to pick the right people and start to normalize that it's okay for it to feel good. And that's what takes deeper work. That's where it comes in working with your therapist, working in a coaching program like the Love Addiction Recovery School, which is mine, where we combine all these concepts. I don't believe you have to choose. I don't think you need to work in different silos. Now, especially us as women who are used to multitasking, I actually think it's to our betterment when we're working at the same time on our trauma and how it integrates with our self-concept and how we feel about ourselves and also our relationship skill set and how to show up in relationships and everything, right? How to use our voice. Let's do all those things at the same time and not feel like we have to go on never-ending self-love detoxes where we swear off relationships and people until we inevitably arise from those and say, okay, you know, I'm ready to start a relationship again. But we have been in our bubble for so long, we didn't also learn the skills of how to integrate identifying and clarifying relationships. So when we exit, we're still just as frustrated as we were before, if not more so, because here I was doing all this healing only to still be met with trash on the other side of it, right? So that's number one. The mistake number one. Mistake number two is not being vulnerable and asking for what you want. It is very interesting, the phenomenon of a love avoidant person just wanting to be in a safe space. A love avoidant person who wants to be in a relationship, you know, who wants to break the cycle. But it's like, I can't find a person, a relationship, a friendship to where I can actually let my hair down and let it happen, right? So let's say you finally get to that place with the chosen family member, the romantic partnership, the friendship, what have you, right? You have all the stuff in number one. You've been through that cycle. You figured it out. You have been lucky enough to find the people who are the safe spaces for you, right? And it's been proven, it's been shown. Now you have them, but you're not utilizing them. It's like you're collecting them like Pokemon. You have all these people around you, but you're not going deeper with them. What this looks like is, are you calling and initiating intimate conversations? Are you checking in? Are you checking in just because you're checking in on how they're doing and you talk about what they need first before you even talk about yourself, if you share anything at all? You know, have they seen you at your worst? And when you think about them seeing you at your worst, how does that feel for you? Do you ever call them and ask them for a favor? Do you ever call them and ask them for things that you can do on your own? Do you do everything still on your own as if you don't have a village, even though you have thoughtfully and mindfully created your perfect pillars of your family system, of your love temple, right? But you are still sitting outside on the metaphorical grass with the rain falling on you, even though you have shelter right next to you. It is very scary to ask someone for what you want, especially if your childhood trauma is related to, like mine. I've shared this already on the podcast, but being very related to being highly parentified and praised for being needless and wantless in some context, you know, and perfecting the art of going without or doing it on your own, not burdening other people with your needs. The idea of having someone who's safe to ask for help and support is something that's been motivating you. But now that you have it, it's scary to do that. You don't know the right words to say, or it might come off very gruff and ultimatum-y, right? So if you don't give this to me, then I'm going to be gone. Like, that's your threat response coming in. So maybe it's not that you have a problem using your voice at all, but you live in an expectation that these people who are proven to be true are not going to do it. So you're ready. Like, you're basically kind of out the door, so that when you ask and when you show up vulnerably with them, you're expecting them to not show up. So if they choose not to, again, you're the one who's doing the cutting off. You're the one who's doing the picking, right? Not them. You're not going to be left with egg on your face because you gave this vulnerable ask without a contingency plan, right? So that in itself, like, it's great that you're asking for things, but when you go with the expectation that someone's not going to do for you, it colors your perceptions. Even when and if they show up for you in the way that you needed them to, your nervous system doesn't track that. Your nervous system is tracking the feelings. Your nervous system is tracking, in this relationship, I have to be on guard. In this relationship, this connection is not trustworthy. In this relationship, I am scared and fearful because they are going to hurt me. That is what's being registered and stored in your body. So this relationship will increasingly, over time, even though they're doing the actions to prove true that you are good, then you're going to continue to feel unsafe until you do the internal body nervous system work, the internal healing, to learn how to be present in relationships, to be vulnerable, to be seen in this way without feeling the need to run. Because ideally, in the right relationships, to be completely seen and known is the goal. It's the prototype. I mean, if that's not what we're doing this for, then why are we here? Right? Like, what is the ultimate relationship you have in your head? What are you doing this for? Are you doing all this work, listening to these things, challenging yourself for breadcrumbs? Is that, if I asked you to write down what it is that you want in your perfect dream relationships, and I told you to pause the episode and do that, right? What would that be? And consider that. Take a moment to consider that. Okay. If you didn't pause and write it down, you've considered it. Right? You have the vision in your head, if you've been able to make a vision. Some of you may not have been being asked what you want so clearly. You're like, I don't even know. That's overwhelming. Your body's gone into freeze mode, right? Because it's just too overwhelming, too scary. That's fine. But for everybody else who has a vision for now. You're going to continue to work on that. Don't worry. It won't be like that forever. But you're starting the process by just considering, I don't know what I want. Like, that's planting a seed for the future. For everybody else who has the vision of what it is that you want, what it would feel like, what it would sound like, what it would taste like, what would they say, what would happen, what would you experience, right? You got that? You got how that feels? Okay, now what I want you to do is I want you to write down or consider everything that you didn't put in that first list. Everything that you were censoring yourself and cutting off, saying this can't happen, it won't happen, I don't need that, that's too much, that's impossible, my lifestyle wouldn't fit for that. All the stuff that you did not write down, but it's still there. Now write that down, right? This is where we're trying to go. The places that we will self-censor ourselves, the relationships, the opportunities that we have, and keep us in a safe, controlled environment that has never been fulfilling. It's been predictable, but it's never been fulfilling. It's only led to burnout, to isolation, to loneliness, to resentment, that we have to do it all on our own, to codependency, right? To higher stress responses for many of us, right? That's what we're doing it for. This ultimate vision. That's what's worth all of this, right? So that's where we're going to go towards in 2025 and beyond. We're going to find the people, the relationships, the healers, the teachers, the programs, you know, hello, I'm here, to help us break these cycles to get to the next step. Okay. All right. And I'll leave talking about the program at the end of the episode, the Love Addiction Recovery School. I'll share a little bit about that, just where to find us. Okay. Last mistake for love avoidance make when dating. Is avoiding dating. You can't see I'm doing the air guns. Gotcha. Avoiding dating altogether. How many of us are not dating? Raise our hands. Okay. Okay. I see you. I see you. I see you. Okay. How many people are not dating because you say you're too busy? Okay. Got it. A lot of you are not dating because you are tired of the dating apps. Okay, yeah. Okay, gotcha. You're tired of the BS, of the pee and the pool of prospects, right? Okay, got it. And how many of us still will dip our toe in a dating app every couple of months for a day or two, even though we're sick of dating and we don't want to be in relationships? All right. How many of us will mute different accounts that have happy relationships because we don't need that negativity in our life? Okay. All right. How many of us have the best girlfriends and have such great, sweet, intimate relationships with people in our lives that are fulfilling and nurturing, and you journal and you do yoga and you pray and you and the Lord got it going on, and you still sometimes have that urge and yearning for romantic partnership? Okay. All right. Thank you for your hands. Right? Avoiding dating is not the problem. Taking breaks, taking moments of time to gather yourself, to heal, of course. You know, like, these are healthy, but when it is your go-to response to cut and run, to recontrol your environment, this has been too unpredictable. It's been too hurtful. Let me get myself straight, AKA let me reset my environment so that everything around me I can meticulously control and be aware of and get that 360, 4D, 5D even concept of my world and what can happen to make sure that this doesn't happen again. And to make sure, like people say, you'll get surprised by the one when it's supposed to happen. I'm gonna see that mother sucker coming. You know, I'm going to make sure that I'm prepared and that he has a list of requirements for me, right? Like, you're not going to catch me off guard. And the way that I can do that is to avoid dating at different points in time until it feels safe for me, and hun, it's not going to feel safe. I hope that what I've led, explained thus far through other examples of things, that to be in any type of partnership where you're getting to know a stranger, good or bad, whether or not it's someone who is predictable and has signs of, you know, predatory stuff, or in the best case scenario for people who aren't a good fit for you, they might not intentionally be predators, but they got the same slick mouth, the same way that your mama does. They got the same resolve anger issues and alcoholism that your dad does, right? They're not trying to hurt you. They're hurting themselves, but they hurt you by association. That in itself is going to be triggering. It's also going to be triggering to be loved. It's going to be very triggering for you to be loved without need of paying someone back, for you to be babied on, for you to be doted on, for you to be met with tenderness, right? I was doing hypnosis recently for some childhood trauma stuff. Let me know if y'all want to hear about that, by the way. But I was doing hypnosis, and so they put me on the table the way that they do it at the place I went to. They put me on the table, and, you know, they're, like, propping me up because they know I like to be propped up, and they're asking, am I comfortable? And they are getting pillows for me, and they're using all these light touches, and they're putting blankets on me, and they're saying, are you okay? And they're dipping the lights, and I started crying because I felt the tenderness and the love of that. You know, I'm sure I've had moments like that before, but I've been, you know, really, you know, in my head, toughed up. I can intellectually understand and parse out that this is a very sweet, loving, gentle experience. And I can be grateful for that. But I couldn't feel that in my body. Now I feel my emotions in my body. So having this overwhelming sense of love was so disarming. It was so exposing. It was like softest touch that will make you cry. I don't know if anyone's ever experienced something like that or heard people talk about that, but that's an absolute real sensation. That can and does happen. Some of us have only felt something similar to that by the hand of someone who's ended up hurting us, cheating on us, betraying us, leaving us, abandoning us. And I'm not going to say that that wasn't tenderness, but I will say that love is not supposed to burn on the other side of it. You know, that sharp, intense response. I hope over time, you will get more experiences that you can compare to that one to say, oh, okay. Yeah, that intensity that I felt with that person, that very deep connection, that feeling of being seen. Yeah, I felt that, or I felt the version of that that was available for me. And it was more than I had before, or felt like more than I've had before. But this is actually where the magic is. This one actually feels safe. This one feels more exposing, but I'm in a safe space where I can let go, surrender, and fall, right? So sometimes people will ask me, when is the right time for me to get back into dating? I think that's totally dependent on you. I think it's more about your mindset. I don't think it's about how long it takes or even villainizing taking breaks from dating. I encourage you to look out. What are your reasons for that? What is it that I'm hoping to gain? What is it that I'm hoping to protect myself from? What is it that I'm hoping the outcome will be on the other side of this? And can I be honest about that so that you can actually get what it is that you want in the end? Okay. So that is it for now. I'm sending you all so much love. For those of you who would like to work together with me to break these cycles, to change our relationships, you can learn more at therecoveryschool.com. It is my 6-month coaching program that I take you on this whole journey to break these cycles. You will get so much support, resources, breaking down of why these patterns are here, along with our group coaching calls where I will lead you through exercises, homework, questions, concerns that you have, whether or not it's related to the curriculum or the reasons that brought you into the program. You know, people acting up, you wanting to act up on other people, you know, family boundary problems, self-love issues, you know, I got you there. And then all the bonus materials and coursework that come with that and the support system and the community. So you can learn more at blackgirlsheal.org/program, or you can just go to therecoveryschool.com and it will take you directly there. All right. I'm sending you all so much love, sending you my prayers and everything as well. Remember, you are worth it and you deserve to have everything that you greatly desire in your heart. Okay. That's it. Take care of yourselves.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. Before we get started, let's take a small break to say thank you to this week's sponsors.